Support comes from Catholic Charities. Driven by the message of love your neighbor, Catholic Charities is focused on improving lives in Maryland. Give the gift of love during this holiday season and learn more at cc-md.org/love.
All of a sudden, I had to come to grips with preserving my sanity, preserving my faith in mankind.
One day when I was coming home into my funky apartment I had in that cool bohemian neighborhood of Jehangir, I saw this guy.
Hi, everybody. Welcome back to the Stoop Storytelling Series podcast. I'm Jessica Henkin.
And I'm Laura Wexler. And this week on the podcast, Lost Loves, two stories about romances cut short by twists of fate.
Before we get started, we want to thank Mend Acupuncture, a longtime sponsor of the podcast, and they are named Best Place to Get Poked. They are just a lovely place to go in, especially if you just need some acupuncture at the last minute. They're in multiple locations throughout Baltimore.
So this first story is by a gentleman. He really is a gentleman. He was so dapper. His name is John Wesley, and he works in Baltimore's newly created Office of Diversity and Equity for the city government. And so he was listening via Zoom to a show that we did a week or so ago. And he Zoomed in to share this story during the time where audience members can share. And we thought it was just such a lovely story.
I just wanted to tell a quick story about dealing with reconciliation and shock and value and all of it. And it has to do with 9/11. I lost my former fiance in the plane that crashed into the Pentagon. She was a school teacher with one of her students. And the student was a sixth grader, 11-year-old Asia Carter. Sarah Miller Clark was a school teacher. The extraordinary thing about all of that happening at the same time is that the experience challenged everything about who I thought I was. It challenged my faith. It challenged my beliefs. It challenged my unconscious bias, which is something that my boss teaches us a lot about. But it challenged all of that about me. And it was playing out on the world stage. Everything that I'd ever believed about good things happening to bad people, the whole idea of the people who committed the murders committed suicide at the same time that they did it. It was on the air 24 hours a day. It was a worldwide event. And all of this stuff is, and at the same time, my faith, as I said, was challenged. So all of a sudden, I had to come to grips with preserving my sanity, preserving my faith in mankind, everything that I ever thought I'd learned about esoterica, it was all challenged all at the same time. But I knew that the first thing that I had to deal with was not losing my mind. And that challenge in and of itself was something that I was reminded of in a very strange way by my grandmother. And it's in a strange kind of way. I grew up in the Delta of Mississippi during the 50s, in the middle of the civil rights movement. And I watched people going against unbelievable odds, and they always kept their balance. I always remember that. They always kept their balance. They always had this, when I look at her and I look at, my godmother, Fannie Lou Hamer, they worked together for the same rich white families, and we sharecropped together and all that. And watching them deal with people who were racist. I mean, people who were mean. My granddad barbecued for Ross Barnett and John Stennis and James Eastman. And I picked cotton on their plantations. But because I was around them and I saw them, even as a little kid, I knew that I could not hate them, because somehow I was taught that if I got into the hate part of it, that I would lose an advantage, that somehow there was an advantage to being able to look at what was going on and size up what was going on, but at the same time, not to be so controlled by it that you lose your sanity. So I just think that the whole idea of centering, being able to talk about it, but the whole idea of being able to center and not lose control of who you are in a time of crisis is something that I learned from watching my grandmother and her friends just be still, doing the elegant thing often in a time of crisis. That's my story.
Yep. He has lived an extraordinary life and has such a capacity for love and forgiveness. It was really inspiring to hear that just off the cuff, and
yeah,
we weren't anticipating it.
Yeah, yeah, I love that. Just like moving away from what you would think of as the typical like loss of love to considering these larger questions of how do you stay balanced when you are completely thrown. I think so many of us are in situations like that over these past 2 years, and it was really good to hear. Before we go on to our second story for today, we want to thank Baltimore Magazine. You can find them at baltimoremagazine.com and also on the newsstand. And we are doing a show with the Baltimore Wedding folks from Baltimore Magazine, and that will be May 11th at the Baltimore Museum of Industry. It's going to be a show about weddings, stuff from mother-in-laws and brides and grooms and caterers and wedding crashers, all kinds of wedding stories. So join us for that.
Okay, so the next storyteller is Katrina Hanley, and this is a story that she shared also at our rom-com show, and it's just an epic story about falling in love and then missing an important date. Take a listen.
So if I listened to messages from the universe, I probably wouldn't be here today, because I'm not kidding. In the last few days, in three unrelated incidents, my car broke down, my phone died permanently, irreparably, and I had major surgery on my hand. But sometimes reading messages from the universe is not that easy, as this story will maybe illustrate. When I was 20, I was living in Istanbul. This was in 1981, a year after the brutal military coup that resulted in 3 years of heavy martial law. And hundreds of thousands of people were arrested, and some were tortured, both on the right and the left, because it was a kind of Turkish nationalist movement. But I didn't really notice all of that. What I did notice was on every corner, street corner, there was a soldier with a big mitraillette, you know, gun. And also there was a curfew between midnight and 5 a.m. And if you were caught out during curfew, you could be shot on sight legally. We knew this. And while I was there, a couple of people were, tourists were shot down in the Sultan Ahmed Blue Mosque touristy area. Was shot in the back, running, probably stumbling out of, you know, hash bars and opium dens and things that were kind of trendy back then. But the reason that I was in Istanbul is a little, it's another story, but it involves following a French diplomat from Greece. This whole thing was part of a gap year that turned into four, where I was backpacking around the world and getting jobs and picking up lovers when I needed them, both. So here I was in Istanbul, and it threw my diplomat friend, I found out that there was an opening at the most exclusive school in town, private school, French, the French consulate school that served the children of diplomats and also the wealthiest of the Turkish elite, for whom French, speaking French was, well, that's the language of diplomacy, so it was more important than English. The position was art teacher, and I draw on the level of a three-year-old. Back then, too. So I conned my way into the job, mostly because I speak French, and I was not Turkish, and the art teacher had suddenly decided to leave her husband a week before the semester began, so I got this job. The school was illegal, but it existed underground, so we were paid in cash, in Turkish lira, totally worthless outside the country. Every 2 weeks, I'd get a big brown paper bag of the lira and carry it home. Wasn't allowed to open a bank account because it wasn't Turkish. It was an odd situation because all the powerful people sent their kids to this school. Anyway, I used to ride my bike back and forth, and the kids would get dropped off by chauffeurs. So I loved Istanbul. It was amazing. It was just, you know, magical, as they say. It was beautiful old mosques, you know, this ancient city, fantastic views with the Bosphorus and the Black Sea, the spice markets, the bazaars, the very friendly people, the cosmopolitan nature of the town, and fantastic food. One day, when I was coming home into my funky apartment I had in the cool bohemian neighborhood of Cihangir, which is medieval, with twisty streets and big staircases. It's kind of three-dimensional because it would lead down to the Bosphorus Strait. I saw this guy, the most handsome guy I've ever seen in my life, standing at the bottom of the stairs, kicking a ball around. He had dark hair and blue-green eyes, and he tried to chat me up, and I pretended not to care. This went on for a few days. I was coming down every day, like hauling my bike down the stairs, and he began to help me with my bike. Eventually, we engaged and chatted, and I turned into this amazing love affair. We were totally in love. We'd go out in the evenings to the rooftop beer gardens lit by lanterns, to the discotheques, to the nightclubs, and we spent as much time together as we could. It was fantastic, but avoiding curfew. But the academic year was coming to an end. My visa was expiring, and they took visas very seriously. I had to leave the country every few months to get a stamp, and how were we going to stay together? I mean, 1981... no Turks were really allowed to leave the country, let alone a young man of military age. Re-enter French diplomat, who had connections quite high up, and we managed to get a visa for my friend to France that would supersede the restrictions of military government, which was amazing. The problem was that his visa was coming a week after my visa was expiring. So we made a plan that we would meet in France. We'd meet in Paris. And we set a day. We're going to meet on this Friday at noon, picking the most romantic spot we could think of, which was the Eiffel Tower. Now, remember, this is 81. There's no email. There's no cell phones. And in fact, many people in Istanbul, including Cumhur's family, did not have a landline. So the only way of communicating was through the mail. Well, I got on the bus on the day. The bus, yes. I traveled cheap to go to Paris. And somewhere in the middle of Yugoslavia, the bus driver fell asleep. And we had a head-on collision with a car, and the two people in the car were killed, and we were all unhurt, but the bus driver was arrested, and we were just kind of left by the side of the road and told, well, in a few days a bus will come, probably. So I hitchhiked the rest of the way and got to the youth hostel pretty exhausted, discombobulated, you know, out of sorts. But in time to make the meeting, so I went, took metro, got to the Eiffel Tower, and I waited, and he didn't show up. I waited a long time. He didn't come. So I went back, bought a newspaper, got back on the train, and that's when I realized that it was Saturday. I'd missed the day. So I went back the next day, thinking, well, you know, he'll show up. I went back for several days after that. I wrote letters to him, but I never heard from him again. And I don't know whether he gave up because I didn't show up, or whether he never showed up. Maybe he was stopped at the border. Maybe he had just used me to get the visa. I don't know. So I had to do some thinking. And after a few weeks, I thought I read the signs from the universe. I put my backpack on, and I went off on more adventures.
Yeah, so this story feels so heightened in every sense of the word. You know, she's this young woman traveling with her little dog, and then she meets this beautiful man, like, in this medieval part of Istanbul, and, you know, they're under martial law, they can't be out later, they might be shot, you know, and he can't leave because he's got to do his military service, so, and then they miss their reunion right in front of the Eiffel Tower. It's just like, I believe every second of it.
Yeah.
And yet it does feel so
unbelievable.
Yeah. Or just so heightened in the way that life rarely does, at least my own life.
It had real English patient vibes to me.
Yeah. Yeah. It was, it's just so beautiful. And again, we talked, you know, we talked a lot with Katrina about, like, how do you interpret this fact that you didn't, you went on the wrong day?
Well, is it intentional? Yeah.
You went back and he didn't come on other days and you could never reach him. Like, and so it's a story that ends with way more questions than answers, which I think gives it this, like, everlasting quality, you know? It's just great. Anyway.
Well, thanks for listening to it.
Yeah, thank you for joining us today. We want to thank The Wine Source, a wonderful wine, beer, and snacks supplier in Hamden. Please visit them and tell them The Stoop sent you. Please visit stoopstorytelling.com to learn about our May 11th show at the Baltimore Museum of Industry and other upcoming events. And you can also listen to stories there. And you can follow us on Facebook and Instagram at Stoop Storytelling Series. And we want to thank Maureen Harvey, who produces the podcast, and to y'all for listening. We'll be back soon with more stories from The Stoop.
Stay safe.
Just where you were trying to go.